Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Lisa Brennan Jobs has written a book called Small Fry. And in many ways, it's a memoir with a pretty familiar theme, the absent parent. In her case, about a father who for years rejected and even denied their relationship and his duties. When Brennan Jobs was a child, she and her mother, a very young mother, lived near the poverty line, even as that father, Steve Jobs, was becoming a king of Silicon Valley. Lisa Brennan Jobs has avoided cooperating with writers portraying Steve Jobs, biographers, profile writers. She wanted to tell her own story, with all its pain, and after many years, a reconciliation. She's published her memoir to largely excellent reviews, but she told me there's still the lingering feeling that she wished her first book had been about something, anything else, so that it could be completely her story and not the story of the man whose legacy we're all carrying around in our pockets. I asked her to read from the book's introduction.
3 months before he died, I began to steal things from my father's house. I wandered around barefoot and slipped objects into my pockets. I took blush, toothpaste, two chipped finger bowls in Celadon blue, a bottle of nail polish, a pair of worn patent leather ballet slippers, and four faded white pillowcases, the color of old teeth. After stealing each item, I felt sated. I promised myself that this would be the last time. But soon, the urge to take something else would arrive again, like thirst.
Now, you begin this book in the way that you do. Why?
I guess it makes me an active participant in the book. One thing that happened when I started writing is I was disappearing in the pages. I was writing about my parents and different things that had happened, and I couldn't... Other people who read it said, I can't quite locate you. And I think there was a feeling of, like, am I allowed to write my own story when I have such a famous father?
And what are the implications of that? What does that mean?
I knew it was going to be taken in a direction. I knew I was writing a coming-of-age story about a girl, but that it was going to be twisted into the story of a famous man. I wanted to write a coming-of-age story about a girl growing up in California in the 80s and 90s because I felt like it was a universal story. So we were moving a lot and looking for homes.
You moved some incredible number of times.
It was 13 times before I was seven.
Right.
And there was also, even in the homes I was in, a search for a feeling of belonging and being inside and being impossible to push out. Yes, one of the homes was a mansion. Yes, he's so famous. But it doesn't change the fact that we were searching for, that I was searching for a home. And I was hoping that I would have inspiration to write another book first so that perhaps that would dull or numb the fact that I have someone so famous in this family I'm writing about.
And why didn't you write a first
book about
something else?
Because this one kept on coming up. And I think a lot of novelists and...
Coming up meaning what?
Coming up to be expressed. There were stories that kept on, oh gosh, I got...
You had to do it.
I had to, and I think this is common. I think this is common even with novelists where there's a story maybe that has to come out first that then opens the way for other stories. And I felt like that. And also I was hoping, then the second thing I was hoping is I was hoping that my father would be like, incredibly dull on the page.
I'm afraid that didn't happen.
And then it didn't happen.
No,
he was interesting.
Happen.
And I was like, oh gosh, he's going to steal my thunder. No.
Steve Jobs is the father, often the missing father, the father that rejects you for a long time. Much later, it invites you in. There are moments of real cruelty, some of it mindless, some of it you ascribe to immaturity on his part. But it's tough. It's really tough. And what was that like to re-experience every day over your desk?
So this is what I was thinking. You have this thing with memoir where you're going back and you're writing about it again, and you're pulled back into these feelings and these times. But at the end of the day, I got to put down the pen and then go back to my life. I mean, it's like the fantasy of control, right?
Mastery of the past.
Right, so I got to go back and live in the past and elongate the good moments and maybe even elongate the bad moments to really figure out what they meant to me and suffer through them. But I still had control over them ultimately. And I had perspective control. I could see them from the point of view of an adult and a child. I guess that was the purpose of it.
For a long, long period of time, you certainly had no relationship to your father, no acknowledgement from a father. To what degree was he spoken of at home with your mother?
So,
and how?
There were so many discoveries that I made when I was writing the book, right? One of the discoveries was how my mother had left this space open for him to come back. She'd known him since they were both very young, and she knew who he was. And so there was you don't forget that. You don't forget when you know someone who they are. And so she wasn't doing it in some sort of strategic way. Oh, I don't want to turn Lisa against her father. She just genuinely did not want to turn me against my father because she knew that deep down he cared about me.
He was not exactly generous in the early years in terms of providing for you.
No, he was absent in the early years. Mostly my relationship was with my mother, and that was so intense. You know, it was so close the way often only children and their parents are, and then made closer by the fact that we didn't have money, so we were like bound together, you know?
Us against the world.
Yeah, it was a bit us against the world, and I think, and then, I mean, now I have a child and I just think of how, you know, she had to walk to the laundromat to wash the cloth diapers when they were dirty, you know, one set. It's like, oh my gosh.
And worse, and far worse. But how do you make sense of why couldn't he have helped more? I mean, people get split up, they get divorced, but very often they do for each other what they can.
Certainly, I don't think it was a money question. You know, it was emotional. I think he wasn't ready to be a father. My parents were both very young when I was born.
How old?
And 23, and I was not planned for her. And perhaps he was angry about my arrival, so he wasn't around. And I feel there's some credit due that he came back. You know, I think that was hard.
What got him back?
I don't know, but my mother said something like, when his work life was not doing as well. You know, because at that point, he'd been kicked out of Apple, and I think that left an opening for him to look around and notice that we were around. And then he put some effort into getting to know me, really true effort. And I think it was probably a pretty courageous thing because I don't think he really knew how to be around a kid.
So the Steve Jobs that comes out of popular imagination, you get the sense of a visionary, a certain kind of genius, a really difficult, difficult guy, at times cruel, self-centered, moments of kindness, I guess, but they're eclipsed by the other stuff most often. He's gone. This book is accomplished. How do you see him?
I have so many answers to that. The way that you just read he came off was from the other things that you read, not
Absolutely.
From my book.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious how mine is different from those for you.
Because it's a book about you.
Right. I thought so, too.
It's a book about you.
Yeah. And how does he come off differently?
Well, I there are moments where I want to hit him.
More than before.
Well, because it's coming from a kid who's palpable on the
page. Right, right. So it's like,
Shouldn't
it's not
I?
Necessarily a different character that I'm describing. It's just that it's visceral now.
I think that's fair.
I've tried to understand why this reaction has been strong, because I feel like he's been so well covered. It's like,
yeah.
And that there are moments of joy, tenderness, sweetness, care in this book between the two of us that are nowhere else, right?
Well, so, maybe it's because people feel a certain sense of, it's very strange to me in a certain way, relationship and ownership to this guy who's now been dead for a while.
Yeah.
Because he's in their pockets.
Right.
He's on their desks.
Right.
It's a very odd thing. People feel they have ownership. And here you come into the world, the daughter who has been treated badly or rejected or and forgotten in the early years, and then a very complicated reconciliation and relationship develops, and there's even on his deathbed. Maybe you should tell us about what happened when he was very sick.
Yeah, so we kind of had a Hollywood moment. I went back to see him before he died, and he was apologizing fiercely for a weekend and crying. And it was, and saying, "I owe you one, I owe you one," which seemed like such an odd phrase.
What does "I owe you one" mean?
I don't know. I didn't know how to make sense of it, really.
Yeah.
I said to him, if we could do it again, then maybe next time we could be friends. Because we liked each other. We would laugh together. It was fun when we were friends. But also, I meant, not your daughter, please, next time. Like, that was hard.
Yeah.
And he was saying the same thing. God, it was hard. It was so hard.
It wasn't too little,
so
too late?
It may have been, and it was. I don't want to sound, it's hard to say it was too little, too late, because it's been so glorious that it happened, right? But yeah, it was cathartic, but it was also hard to be in the moment at the time. I remember thinking, okay, I guess I'll need to save this for later. Like many of these memories, you kind of are confused and you box them up. So, but I think the process of writing the book was that unboxing.
Maybe a last question, and it's about this, about inheritance. What do you have of your mother's and what of your father's, and in what ways?
Oh God, I was so worried you were gonna ask me about money.
I mean it in a much different sense, yeah.
What do I have of my, it's like,
Was there too little of him to derive enough of him? The book is about this in some sense, not getting enough of someone.
And I think sometimes the famous guy is a little distracting, just because.
The famous guy in the corner over there.
The famous guy in the corner over there wearing the black mock turtleneck. Yeah. Because don't other people feel this way about the complicated figures in their own lives? Like, isn't there sometimes a longing for people who are even around? Mm. Isn't there sometimes a multiplicity of feelings for people who you love? I imagine other people have similar feelings, even though, you know, my father was so famous. Or maybe another way to put it is that everyone's complex family is unique.
No matter who it is.
No matter who it is.
Lisa Brennan Jobs. Her new memoir is called Small Fry.